Welcome once again to the Back in Five podcast. My name is Sean Clark, and I am going to be calling Pastor Brad Belcher, who is actually on spring break vacation with his family back in Angola, Indiana. But I'm going to call him up here, and we're going to chat a little bit about what we heard this last week in Mark chapter 15. So let's get him on the phone.
Well, hello, Sean.
Brad, what's going on, man?
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
That's good. And you're actually making it more beautiful in your yard right now, right?
Yes. I'm cleaning up all the leaves that I should have cleaned up last fall.
Well, it's good to put stuff off every once in a while.
Well, it's all done now, though.
Right. There you go. Nice. Well, we miss you up here in Chicago, but you are on vacation with your wonderful family in Angola, trying to get some stuff ready to sell your house, right?
That's exactly right.
Perfect. So, well, hey, I'm going to talk with you not just about your house in Angola and your beautiful family, but I want to talk to you about Mark chapter 15. Do you got a few minutes to talk about it?
I sure do.
Perfect. So we're in a series. Everybody knows we're in a series. We've been in the series in the Gospel of Mark for the last number of months, started it back in September, and now we kind of find ourselves at the very end of the book. So we're in chapter 15, and you looked at verses 1 through 15 in Mark chapter 15 this last week, and so I want you to kind of talk us through, you know, the passage, some of the things that you saw, some of the things that you pointed out.
Well, as we saw, we're really getting the second half of Jesus' trial. The first half has already taken place in chapter 14. And now the Jewish authorities are really going to finalize things early in the morning here and hand Jesus over to Pilate. And that's where it really gets very, very interesting and difficult for Jesus.
Right. Now, I thought you opened up the sermon in a very and a great way to set up Mark chapter 15, because you talked about how we all have this longing for justice, that there needs to be some sort of standard by which we can judge things to see if whether they're right or wrong. And you talked about the Jewish and the Hebraic concept of justice and how that it was established in the Torah. So kind of talk us through that, because we're going to see the religious leaders breaking all kinds of rules here in chapter 15.
Right. We talked about the Jewish system of justice that's outlined in passages like Deuteronomy 16 and with more information in Deuteronomy 17. And it's very straightforward, where there are three, you know, main things that are guaranteed through this kind of setup with the Jewish authorities. In particular, that you have a right to a trial, first of all. You have a right to have witnesses, and you have a right to have representation. And so, in all three of these, Jesus doesn't get any of this. He basically has people saying horrible things that aren't factual, aren't true at all, and they just throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
And everyone's watching it happen. Even some of Jesus' closest friends are watching it all take place. In all likelihood, John, he's right there, one of his best friends, watching this whole thing go down.
Right. So as you start to work your way through the passage, we see that this is what is set up, and he's before the regional Sanhedrin, and then you talked about the great Sanhedrin and all the different religious leaders. In the midst of all that, we look at Jesus in chapter 15, verses 1 through 5, before Pilate and the whole council, and you talked about him being someone who spoke the truth.
Right. Here's Jesus is someone who always speaks what's true, and this is a part of the case that I want to build in light of his being put on trial, the case for Jesus's complete innocence here.
Yeah.
In that he hasn't done anything at all wrong. And it's Pilate who brings up this issue in John 18 with the parallel passage where he starts talking to Jesus about truth, and he keeps pushing Jesus, you know. Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord?" In John 34, in terms of this question, you know, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Or did others say it to you about me? And Pilate answers, you know, very sarcastically, what, am I a Jew? Your own nation, your chief priests have delivered you over to me.
Right.
What have you done?
Yeah.
And so here Jesus starts saying, well, here's the deal, man. My kingdom's not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world. And Pilate says, so you're a king. Jesus answers, you say that I'm a king. For this purpose I was born, and this is an incredible statement, for this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. And here is where we get this interesting statement from Pilate, where he goes with the relativity of the day by saying, well, what is truth, Jesus? And what's crazy is he's looking at it. I mean, Pilate's looking right at
truth,
the one who is, in fact, truth, where Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life. So in terms of, you know, comparing ourselves to who Jesus is, we're guilty because we wrestle with the truth, but Jesus doesn't. He always says what's true because he, in fact, is true. It is truth, no matter how you slice him. So
right.
In John 8:31, real quick, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So we're all longing for justice. We're all longing for truth here. And Jesus is the deal. He is what's true and the one that we can count on. And then the passage goes into this, we have to really look at another comparison passage in Luke 23 to hear the rest of the story, as Pilate then sends him over to deal with Herod. And, oh man, and Herod, these people are nuts, Sean. They're just crazy people.
Yeah, I remember you bringing this up. I remember talking to you about it probably a month or so ago, but then the way you brought it up in the sermon, you know, these are kind of people that think it's cool to, like, cut off people's heads and serve them on platters at parties.
Right. I mean, that's just nuts. And so Jesus very wisely and with great, a quiet humility, he doesn't respond to this guy. And that's something that we might want to take note of. Jesus just does not respond to crazy people. I could use to learn that a little bit. Sometimes we encounter crazy people, right?
Right, right. So he walked. He had quiet humility. He submitted himself. Obviously, we get the great, kenosis passage in Philippians 2:5-11, and just the model of humility and, you know, John 13 serving his people, and once again, just before Herod, he's silent. But continue on, because Mark doesn't give, you know, you talked about if you want to get the whole picture of the trial and everything, you really need a compilation of all the Gospels. And so we talked about verses 6-11, but then also the parallel passage in Matthew 27 that he walked in, and I believe it was righteousness is what you said.
Well, and here again, we get this contrast between Jesus and Barabbas, where the crowds are calling for Barabbas' release. And Pilate has apparently this thing he does every year where he lets somebody go during the festival. And, you know, he's like, well, there's nothing wrong here with Jesus. That'd be simple. Let's just, you know, let's send Jesus out. And they're all saying, no, 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 we want Barabbas to be released. And that, you know, well, then what do you want me to do with Jesus? And it's at this very moment, this crisis in terms of, you know, whether I should, you know, release Barabbas or not.
Yeah.
That in Matthew 27, we find out that Pilate's wife has approached him and says, hey, have nothing to do with this righteous man. So here's the contrast, that here's Barabbas, who's an insurrectionist. He's committed murder. He's a rebel. Everybody knows it. And here's Jesus, who's done none of those things. And even Pilate's wife says, look, he is a righteous man. So he speaks what's true. He's full of humility. He is righteous in every way. And then, you know, the whole thing closes out with the last four verses of this little section of Scripture, verses 12-15, where Pilate's asking, well, you know, you want me to crucify him? Well, what evil has he done?
Yeah.
The answer is he hasn't done any.
Yeah,
and really, this sets the formula up for us, Sean. That Jesus is completely guiltless, and because he's guiltless, he is the perfect one to be sacrificed for us, that we might be forgiven. which is really the whole foundation of the message.
Right. I thought it was just a great way to conclude this passage by going to Hebrews 4:15 and 1 Peter 2:22-24. You know, just so appropriate for us because we need a high priest who, you know, is tempted and tried in every way and yet without sin and can represent us before a holy judge.
Well, I love what Peter said because, you know, Peter was there for some of this before, you know, he ran off crying, where in 1 Peter 2:22, he committed no sin. Mm. Neither was deceit found in his mouth when he was reviled. I mean, what's he referring to? He's referring to this trial, the all-night trial that he had with the Pharisees and Sadducees and everybody, and the high priest. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. Hmm. And so here's Peter with a firsthand account of the complete guiltlessness of Jesus, which is just beautiful.
Yeah.
And really demonstrates that, you know, Jesus really is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, which is what we desperately need. We need someone who can pay our price because we can't.
Right. Well, so you know, you ended with a call to respond to the gospel message because it's pretty clear, and I imagine too, like as we get into the crucifixion narrative at the second half of Mark chapter 15, it's appropriate to respond to it as well. And I love how Mark points out, as we look forward to this next week, when we finally get somebody understanding completely, who this Jesus was in Mark chapter 15, verse 39, where you finally get someone that says, you know, a Roman centurion, for that matter, who says, surely, you know, this was the Son of God. Like, finally, somebody in the Gospel of Mark gets it fully and completely.
Right, and that's so refreshing for us because that's exactly what we need, definitely.
Right. And so we really hope you come out this next week, either at 9:30 or 11, and hopefully if you're listening to this or if you have friends that could come and benefit from hearing this message. But we all here at Bethel Community Church really hope that we all get to the point of Mark chapter 15, 39, where we recognize that Jesus was truly the Son of God and respond in faith to him. So we hope to see you out on Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11. We'll see you, Brad.
Thanks, Sean.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.